This episode is brought to you by Hearst Ranch, grass-fed beef raised on California's Central Coast. Now available online through Larder Meat Company. Learn more at HearstRanch.com.
This week on Meat & Three, we rethink surplus by exploring how innovators are promoting sharing mindsets and responding to excess in creative ways.
The whole life cycle of food would be the third largest greenhouse gas emitter behind China and the United States if it were a country.
You know, in the age of COVID, where a lot of those institutional processors did grind to a halt and a lot of farms had to dump milk in Pennsylvania, even while supermarket cases were bare, the organic market stayed strong.
They source all of these ingredients, they do all of this work, and then they just boil it for a few minutes and then they throw it away.
Tune in to Meat & Three, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Processing, a show about the intersection of food and grief, with your hosts, me, Zara Tangora, and
Bobby Conforto, your mom.
Hi, my mom. How are you?
I'm pretty good, Zaz. It's been an interesting week.
Yeah, you got your second vaccine this week.
I did, with a lot of anticipation, and it feels really good to be part of, you know, hopefully making things better.
Yeah.
For everybody. So I feel good about it.
Good.
Yeah.
I'm happy. I'm happy that we're going to be able to spend some time together again
soon. I know. I miss you in my kitchen.
I know. I'm really looking forward to it. So today we are joined by Sydney Taylor. And boy, oh boy, was this an episode. What an incredibly rich, deep, emotional, incredible episode. Sydney is the host of A Piece of Grief, a new podcast exploring grief. And I'm not going to give too much away because we talk a lot about it in the episode, but Sydney is just an incredible human being, and we're so lucky to have connected with her, and we've really made a new friend. We already made plans for hanging out in the future. She's incredible.
And I would like to say, you know, having worked with many, many bereaved parents in my career, is just a special grace and honoring that we need to give towards bereaved parents. It's just such a position to be in, you know.
Absolutely.
And she does it with such strength and love, and she's a beautiful person.
And bravery, as we mentioned during the episode, I think is the key word there, real extreme bravery.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, I can't wait for, without further ado, we're going to get onto it because it's just such an incredible episode. But I do want to make a small note just to a friend and listener who I'm just going to let be nameless because I'm not sure if they want to be shouted out, but you know who you are. A friend of mine is losing their father. They're kind of, you know, their father has been battling with cancer for a long time, similar to how my dad did. And I think that it seems as though they are going to pass on very soon. And I just wanted to say to that person, just send a big hug from us and all of the grief and processing community. Just send good vibes out into the universe for this person. And then also for all the other folks out there who are going through hard times. Let's all just send some good vibes outward today.
Yep. Big hug.
All right, Bobby. Well, I love you, and what a joy to spend an hour and a half of time with you each and every Friday. And Sydney, words can't describe how, you know, also just to quickly note that Sydney lost her son Benjamin very recently. And a lot of folks that join us on this show, some folks are, you know, grief is a lifelong process, so there's no quantifying which, at what point it's the most painful, but it is
it's still very acute and raw.
It's very, very brave and very generous to share at this point in the grieving process. So just an extra special thank you. We acknowledge that, how difficult that must have been for you, Sydney. And we're very, very thankful for you and thankful for A Piece of Grief, which is an incredible new podcast. We encourage everyone to please listen. A Piece, APEACE. Of Grief is the name of the show, which is beautiful. And please enjoy our conversation with Sid.
Hey,
We are joined today by a very special guest, Sydney Taylor. And we spoke a little bit last week, and I honestly felt like within a couple minutes of our conversation that we had been friends for like 25 years. You're just such a warm person, and we made such a great connection. And so I was been looking forward to having you on the show ever since.
Likewise. Yeah. Likewise, honestly.
Yeah. All so Sydney, you just launched your own podcast, A Piece of Grief, which we're going to get into later. But how is it going? Welcome to the podcasting world, first of all.
I know. Thank you. It's scary out here. Yeah. It's scary out here in the podcasting world. And it's extra scary because we're dealing with such a scary subject, grief.
I know.
So I'm tiptoeing a lot. And then there are times when I'm like, okay, Sydney, you need to plant your feet and ground yourself. So I'm kind of like dilly-dallying with tiptoeing and just being firm. But so far, so good.
Yeah.
And of course, this is about making grief less scary. That's why we're here, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, we've both listened to all the episodes that you have out. You have 3 episodes out now, and they're all amazing and touching and wonderful. And I can't wait to get into it. But first, since this is a show where we kind of explore the intersection of food and grief, we have to ask, what have you been cooking lately? Because I know that you love to cook from our conversation before. So what's been on your stove?
Listen, I love to cook, but I'm the type of person that cooks from ingredients. Like, I see colors first and then I create a meal. But I'm obsessed with this TikTok viral tomato feta pasta thing.
Uh-huh. Yeah, we've seen that around.
Yeah.
What's the deal? What's going on with it? We haven't made it. What's up?
Oh my gosh, it's so amazing. Grape tomatoes, season them, a little olive oil, a block of feta in the middle, 375 for 30 minutes. Throw in some pasta, your favorite, do whatever. So I did it the first time, and this is my second time doing it, and I didn't do it with feta. I found the most amazing cheese.
What is it?
It's a wild mushroom brie from Trader Joe's. Girl. And I added a block of smoked Gouda. Girl, let me change my whole life.
Really?
Yes, I made that last night. I did some chicken breast, like grilled some chicken breast, and just a ton of fresh basil and garlic.
Oh, yeah. Yum.
Beautiful.
That sounds delicious. It sounds great. I mean, I think during like times when we're kind of dealing with a lot of stuff, but we are people who love to cook. Like, you know, we all end up in the kitchen. Bobby, I know you feel that way when you're...
It's my healing space.
Yeah. It's a way to like, I mean, we talk about this often, but I think like, you know, we all need to find a way in one way or another to kind of take our brains offline for a minute, especially when you're doing this kind of work. Like now you're, you know, podcasting and constantly thinking, and not just thinking about your own grief, but like talking about it. And in that, there's like managing other people's expectations and stuff too. So I think finding a way to take our brains offline and get in the zone feels really good.
And the kitchen is the place, if ever there was a place, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Because you have such ownership over your kitchen, and there's very to little intrusion except for the little people that we call our children. But we wouldn't want it any other way. But no, I love being in the kitchen.
Awesome. Where did that come from? Was mom or dad a cook, or what was the family routine like growing up surrounding food?
No, I'm from Jamaica, and so it's a lot of cultural foods. And can I just share something with you? My mom never fried anything except for probably like eggs or plantains or something like that. So I don't know how to fry chicken.
Okay.
Yeah. The idea of submerging anything in that much oil freaks me out. I can eat it though. Look, I can eat it.
Well, it's dangerous too. I mean, look, I agree. I mean, and also it smells up the house. There's a lot of issues with frying
at home. I don't trust myself to fry anything or to use a pressure cooker. But I think that I ended up loving cooking because I'm so particular.
Mm. So what do you mean by that?
About food.
Oh, because you're particular about food. Okay, got it.
Yeah, about how food looks and how it tastes, because I want the food to taste the way it looks, right? And I can trust myself. And so I've been practicing for years now. and I've brought people into my world and they love my cooking and I appreciate that. And so I do it from a place of passion. If I can gift you with a meal, right?
Amazing.
Which is my time, the time that I take to prepare it, and just the time that I get to spend with you and the love that I put into it. I can't cook out of obligation because you're expecting me to.
Right.
I don't do well.
So what were there some typical kind of Jamaican foods like in your house growing up? Or, you know, you kind of mentioned earlier that some of the cuisine that, you know, your parents would make was typical.
So I grew up with the typical Jamaican cuisine, the curries, the jerks, the boils and stuff like that. And so once I started my own family, I didn't want to do that. I wanted to do something different. So I very seldom cook Jamaican food in my home, to be quite honest. I'm like, I know that. I want to challenge myself and try something else. I want to try it and mess it up and try again and perfect it and then add my own little flair to it.
Totally. You know, perfect. I mean, it sounds like you have the same kind of inclination towards food as Bobby and I, which is just like a little bit of this, a little bit of that method, like really cooking from your heart.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Cool. Yes. So, Sydney, you started this incredible podcast. We found each other on the internet, as people seem to nowadays. And can you just tell us a little bit about your story and what prompted you? There's a big story and a lot of baggage and a lot of information behind what prompted you to start this beautiful project. Can you just tell our listeners a little bit about that?
Sure. I started the podcast, A Piece of Grief, because of my son, Benjamin. Benjamin was 9 years old. We lost him in September of last year too. It's a host of things. I don't know that his doctors were able to pinpoint whether it was the cancer, whether it was heart failure from his transplant, whether it was a result of, you know, the Bartz syndrome that he was also diagnosed with. And so having lived this life with Benjamin, where it seemed as if from the moment he was born, even though he was born healthy, you know, the quotes, healthy, he did go into the NICU for the first 5 days. And so at about 4 months old, I noticed that something was off. I took him to the emergency room. Fast forward, he is in heart failure, and he was then diagnosed with dilated cardiomyopathy, which is where the muscles of the heart are enlarged. He's 5 months old, he's 9.5 pounds, and his heart is not doing its best. And so the best case scenario for him at the time was to get a heart transplant.
Oh, for such a tiny baby.
Yeah. So we ended up getting a heart in July of 2011. The transplantation, I want to say that it went smoothly because he made it out, but it didn't go that smooth, right? Mm-hmm. And we've lost him a total of 3 times. And so, yeah. So I brought him home after 6 months, and I just became everything for him. He was later diagnosed with autism. He didn't have intelligible speech. He was failure to thrive in all areas. And even when he passed away, cognitively, he was measuring at an 18-month-old. So I say that to say that I was everything for him and to him, and he was everything to me. And so for the past 10 years, my life was dedicated to taking care of him, and all these different hiccups and all these different obstacles that would present themselves. And we did it day by day, just one step at a time. And he fought long and he fought hard. Benjamin's symptoms would present at their worst at the 9th hour, and that's when we would know that, okay, this is dire. It's, you know, I'll have him at home and I'm like, okay, something is terribly off. I take him to the emergency room or to the doctor. And had I taken him a second later, it would have been something else. And so having lived that life with Benjamin, I just thought to myself after he passed that I have all this pain, all this pain. I have this story. It is just so much and it's just so heavy. How can I keep it to myself? Mm. When Benjamin passed away, he passed away in my arms. Mm. And I wasn't at the hospital, but I made it back with 7 minutes to spare and to hold him for those last 7 minutes. And when I thought that he had given his final breath, his dad and I looked at each other, and dad is a respiratory therapist, so he does this every day, right? Mm-hmm. And so I said, that's it, because I don't know what death looks like. Absolutely. I don't know how it presents. I don't know how it
comes. You had never been with anybody that had died before.
No, no. And so I'm holding my child, and if I can be completely honest, and you'll probably say, Sydney, you're crazy, I thought up until the last hour that Benjamin would be the child and all the world would be the person to just come back to life. Mm-hmm. Because I couldn't understand how someone like Benjamin, who didn't understand pain, didn't know what pain was, but he felt so much pain and he felt pain all his life, mm-hmm. but he could not process it as pain. How is it that he doesn't get to live to tell his story?
Yeah.
How is it that he doesn't, you know, what I would say, come out victorious? But he did.
Right.
He did come out victorious. And so when we thought that his last breath was his last breath, and I looked at him, I don't know how, but he gave us one more, one big inhale and the final exhale. And I took that as a gift. And I just told him thanks. Because even in that moment, I'm like, okay, he's giving me this last breath. This is what he's gifted me. Yeah. It means something. It has to mean something. I don't think that we went through all of that so that I can have the memories for myself. And so I'm like, how can I get this out to people? How can I tell people that you can pivot wherever you are and shoot for something? And it's not, I'm not here to fix anybody. I'm just here to say it's okay.
Right. That's very
I'm just here to say
you took meaning in that last breath.
I did.
So it meant to you what? Help us understand what that meant to you, that last breath.
It meant that, so within myself, I wanted, as his mom, I wanted him to be able to tell his story, to say, I've gone through all of this and look at me, look at me, like I made it out. I am a survivor. Hold on, right? So his life would be an emblem for hope, right? And for strength and for holding on. And since he didn't get to do that, I took that breath as my responsibility. I took that breath as my devotion to him to tell his story. And who other than Ben, who else could tell his story?
Absolutely.
I have been his voice all his life because he, again, did not have intelligible speech.
Right. You know, Sydney, it strikes me, I'm just to go back a little bit to what you were saying earlier, how you're like, you know, you're going to think I'm crazy for saying this, but I thought he would have been the one person in the world to, you know, kind of come back to life. I just want to kind of, I connected with that because I think that being that we don't really speak about grief openly as much as we should, and obviously, you know, people like you are helping to change that reality, but when it actually happens, we have all these thoughts that aren't quote unquote crazy. It's so reasonable for your mind to go to these places of being like, you're intaking this information that you're going through a loss. So thinking, yes. Oh, but they could come back. Like, you know what I mean? Like It's your stages of your brain and body accepting what's actually happening, which is so much that we have to take it in like little bits. You know, it's,
yes.
It reminds me oddly of, I was in a terrible accident when I was like 21 and I was in a bus that went off a cliff and went and burst into flames and exploded. And I remember when I got out of, I was on a tour with a friend of mine who's a musician. And I remember running from this burning bus up like a, we had gone off a cliff. So running up the side of the cliff away from it and thinking, well, I hope we still get to go on with the tour. They'll send another bus and tomorrow we'll keep going on. Meanwhile, half my hand was hanging off. The thing was on fire. That was so far from reality. But like my brain had to take it in little bits, right? Like, oh, yeah. I've just survived. And now I'm like thinking that like, you know, about tomorrow. You know what I mean? Like, I hope that,
yeah.
And you can only kind of take it in so much. So, you know, it doesn't sound crazy. It makes sense. And I bet a lot of people when they go through such that, I mean, also even to backtrack even further, thank you so much for even sharing. This loss is so recent. You lost your child months ago. You know what I mean? And so
September,
to have already begun your own show to talk about this, to try to help people and to come on here and share is so deeply generous and so powerful and kind
and brave.
Yeah.
And you were brave all those yeah. years. So brave, all of you.
So much bravery.
To walk through that, as you say, step by step.
Yeah. I have a question. I'm curious to know, just thinking about what your life had been like for the past decade in caring for Benjamin in this way. How did you find, what were ways you found to care for yourself? And I guess, you know, because I'm thinking food and eating and cooking, but whatever that looked like, how did you find time to nurture yourself and your spirit and your body to be able to have the strength to keep going on through all of this?
Great question.
Yeah, that's a good question. And I pride myself in honesty. And for so many years, Zara, I did not. There was no me because I was a new mom and all of this was so new. I did not know what to do with it, but I knew that I needed to show up for Benjamin and I knew that I needed to serve him. And so for a lot of the last decade, it was just to serve him because it was, I'm going to do everything in my power to make sure that you get the best care, to make sure that I don't skip a beat. They will tell you at the hospital, they know me. Mm-hmm. I don't hiccup. I don't I ask all the questions.
Yeah.
I'm present.
Believe that.
All the time. And so I only knew how to fully immerse myself into Benjamin's life. And then that didn't leave any, there was no me.
Yeah.
There was no me until a couple years ago when his brother came along, Harper. Mm. And now I'm divided, right? And so I started to feel that depletion when it was just Benjamin. I don't know if being absorbed by him, so Ben and I were one.
Right.
Now I'm being distracted by my newborn Harper and he has his own needs, right?
Yeah.
And so once I realized that I needed to meet Harper, I was like, oh, Sydney, what do you have to give Harper? You don't have anything. And so I had to find something for myself. I asked for help. I asked for childcare. I had a friend come and live with me so that she could help me. I went to the gym. Mm. I hid in the gym. I started to go out with my friends because I was afraid of leaving. Mm-hmm. What if I leave and something happens?
You had been in emergency mode.
If there's an, yeah. And I always worry about when we end up at the hospital, are you going to be able to tell me exactly what happened? Because I need to be able to convey that. And I need to do that with confidence because they rely on me for that.
Right. You know, I think we don't also know a lot about what it's like for caretakers. you know, and caretakers and burnout, and also like the guilt of being a caretaker and feeling like torn. I'm assuming I can only speak for my own experience with it, which is nowhere near what yours has been.
But you're correct.
But like the guilt associated with like, is it okay to take care of myself? Is it okay to like do the things that I need to do? And how do I even do that? And then now in his passing, I'm sure, and I would hope you could share your feelings about this, but like that pivot, right? Like talk about pivoting, that pivot back to like, now what? I mean, what is that feeling like for you as like moving into this new phase of your life in caring for yourself? And is that in some way what this podcast and this project is for you?
Yes. This is exactly what it is. This is what I talk about when I say I pivot on the pain, right? Mm. Because those experiences, if I capsule them, I'll capsule them in pain, right? But now I have to charge that. And it needs to produce something. And so in order for it to produce something, I don't have the physical Benjamin. So I now have to operate in full Sydney, who lived all of that.
Yeah.
I just don't think that not talking about it. And also, allow me to say this. My culture does not create an environment for, I want to say, healthy grieving, right? Mm. It's everything up until the funeral. You holler and scream and just behave ungodly, right? Because that's how you say, I miss you so much. And
yeah.
And then you come back home and life begins to life you. Mm-hmm. Everybody stops coming over. People are going back to their own lives. And while that is just how life is, you are left to deal with you. And I just could not allow myself to pretend that I'm okay. I just couldn't allow myself to hide, because I got to the point where I was like, this can legitimately kill me.
Absolutely.
You know, I tend to think of things in terms of energy. And it sounds to me that you and your husband, you know, put so much energy moment by moment, day by day, so committed to, as you say, you were on top of every single thing. And then all of a sudden, where does that energy go? And so what you're saying is, I knew that if it imploded and I didn't find a new way to let that energy out, that it would implode and it would destroy me. Is that kind of what I hear you saying?
Bobby, that's what it is. That's exactly what it is. And then I have to contend with the person that I am. I don't want to be a burden. I don't like pity. So I have to figure out how and where to go with all of this energy. Mm. I can't keep it to myself. It's too much.
Yes.
It's too much to keep it to myself. And I know that my story is not for everybody, but I know without a doubt that it is for someone. And I'll do it for that one person.
Well, I'll be honest with you. In thinking of your podcast, the things you said about the death of your child, about Benjamin, applies mm-hmm. to every aspect of grief. You said so many things. I've been doing grief work for, you know, 30, 40 years. And I have worked with thousands of people as they talk about grief. And you were so good at articulating so many aspects of different kinds of loss, whether somebody lost a spouse or a parent. You know, so many things you said reflected a general kind of loss to any loss. So, you know, one of the things you were talking about was meaning, too. You know, Benjamin was your meaning. And every aspect of your life was focused on that. And so another thing, one of the tasks of grief is to find new meaning. And it sounds like your podcast and your commitment to sharing your grief with others is a way of you finding new meaning in your life. Is that how you feel?
That's what I hope to do.
Yeah.
That's what I hope to do. Otherwise, I'll just waste away. I didn't work all this time while I was taking care of Benjamin. So I don't have a career. I don't have anything to say, let me go back to that. it would be going back to Benjamin because he was my thing.
Right.
He was my world. And so with Benjamin not being here anymore, all of this, whatever you can imagine, it fills me every day, every hour. And I cannot sit in my bed with this. I write constantly because I need to get it out. And I'm realizing that grief is not what, if you've not experienced it, you don't know what it is. And again, where I'm from and the culture that I'm from, they'll probably say that I'm being extra, that I'm doing the most, but I'm full.
Yeah.
That's what I am. I'm full. And if it offends you, I don't have the bandwidth to figure out what's going on with you.
Right.
Right. I don't know how to curate my grief to make it more digestible for you, because then I'm doing myself a disservice. And I cannot, that, like, for me, there's no way that would honor Benjamin's life. And so
that's very powerful.
This is how I show up.
It's very powerful. And I think that statement is extremely important to relay. And you talk about just affecting one person. I think that that can affect, you know, countless amounts of people. Being authentically in your pain and not being apologetic for it is very important, you know. And also, like, yeah, we're not prepared for this until you're prepared for it. So having little bits of taking in what it might feel like from folks like yourself before going through this kind of experience or while going through it is extremely important. You know, you talk a lot about purpose on your show.
Yes. Yes.
It's evident and it's powerful and it's incredible. And I was struck in thinking after our conversation and then again this past week in speaking with a friend who's gone through a lot of loss this past year and is continuing to. And in thinking about grief in general, have you ever seen the movie, the Kill Bill movies?
No.
Okay. So there's Kill Bill 1 and 2. And I'm just going to briefly talk about this. Then I'm going to send you a clip.
Is that Uma Thurman?
Uma Thurman, exactly.
I might have seen snippets.
Yeah. So in the second one, I hadn't seen them in a while. And I certainly never thought of these films as being particularly poignant about grief, although they are, because, you know, in the first one, we come to find out she's lost her, you know, husband and bunch of people have been killed at her wedding. So anyway, in the second one, she's on a revenge to, like, get the people who killed her family. And she comes across this guy and he thinks he's got her and he buries her alive. And we all think it's, you know, it's all over. And then she has a flashback while she's lying in this box, been buried alive, to when she went to go train with a kung fu master in Japan. And she arrives in the flashback to Japan and she arrives there and he asks her to punch her hand through a thick wooden board. So she punches it and she splits her knuckles open. And she essentially spends, on this montage, we see her spend the next several months punching and practicing and punching to this board till her hands are bloodied and her knuckles are broken and she can't even hold the chopsticks to eat her rice. And then finally she punches through it, right? And then we flash back to her being in this box, having been buried alive. And it flashes into her mind that she knows how to punch through this box. And so she starts punching and punching. And her knuckles start splitting apart and bleeding. But she just keeps punching it. And she punches through. And then she punches through the wood. And she reaches her hand and her body and through the 6 feet of dirt that she's been buried under, and she gets out and she walks out covered in dirt into a diner, and she's covered in dirt and she says, I need a glass of water. And it just really struck me as to people like yourself and others who have experienced grief, why does this happen? It's like this question of, like, why the fuck does this happen to us, to some people, so intensely? And then you find yourself sometimes and you're like, because look at me now. Now I know how to punch this thing. I'm seemingly trapped, but I'm not, because I've gotten through.
Fantastic, beautiful metaphor of that. Brought tears to my eyes because,
I know,
Sid, we see you, how you have fought and fought and fought, and here you are fighting, but in a different way.
Yeah.
In a different
way. But there was always love. There was always love. You fought for Benjamin with love, and you're fighting for yourself with love.
And it really just, I know it was a long way to get to the point, but it just was so poignant.
Oh, yeah.
And it really reminded me so much of you after speaking with you, like that and that strength that like, oh, wait, I know how to do this. It's not necessarily pretty or ideal, but I know how to do this. And yes. It really, you really admit that, you know, you really do. And it's very, it's incredible. And we don't get to choose the things that happen to us, these awful, horrible things.
Would we choose this?
No.
But what do you do with it? What do you do with it?
Absolutely not. I think that, and there's an episode that I am doing, I'm talking about. I don't get up every morning, or back then, even now, I don't get up and say, okay, this is how I'm going to be strong today.
Yeah.
No, I have just lived a life of service. I live to serve. Mm-hmm. I am being who I want people to be to me. And so I just serve. And I did yoga I have no proof, but I did yoga a couple of sessions.
I love that. No proof.
And what I took away from those sessions was, if you can breathe through it, you can get through it.
A wonderful metaphor. Yep.
Yeah. And I try to channel that. If anything, I always go back to my breath.
You know, right? It's so beautiful. I had studied at Kropalo once, and there was a particular program where they asked you to hold poses for a really long time, for an excruciating long time. But the whole purpose of it was to teach yourself what happens when you get to a point where you can't go any further, and then you go further because you breathe. And then you can't go any further, and then you breathe again. And you could find yourself holding poses for an unbelievable amount of time, which is a perfect example of what you've had to do.
Oh, definitely. Absolutely. Definitely. I'm always just like, okay, Sydney, you're still breathing? Okay, good. Because when you, for me, when I focus on my breath, nothing else, because nothing else can help me.
Yeah.
And I realized that no one can help me. No one can fix me. There's no fix.
Right.
There's no fix. But if I can breathe, then something will resolve. And then I continue breathing, and something else will resolve. And so from September 29th at 4:41, I'm sorry, when Benjamin gifted me that last breath, I've recycled it, You know, I said back then, I wrote a letter to my friends, like an open letter. And I said, if I could inhale for me and exhale into him, I would have. But that's not even as great as the last breath that he's given me, because I get to recycle that, and it gets to produce and produce and produce. And that breath sustains me so that I can parent my 5-year-old that's grieving. 5-year-old grief. Have you ever?
Can you talk about that a little bit? What is 5? Because no, I'm not a parent, and I'm what is 5-year-old grief like?
5-year-old grief this week is, I wish I could get up and get you. There's this balloon that someone sent to my house with some flowers, you know, congratulations. So 5-year-old grief in this house this week is that balloon that says congratulations. Mm. My 5-year-old Harper names the balloon Ben. Mommy, can you put Ben on the table so he doesn't float away again? I don't want him to float away from me. Ben, you stay right here. Mommy's making dinner. I'm going to bring you your dinner. And he gets his cars and he gets his toys and he plays. And when he goes to bed, he tucks Ben under the table. So I don't want you to float away from me. I don't want you to leave me anymore. And he says, Mommy, please, please don't pop my balloon. And then I'm like, okay, but I know that it's a balloon, and I know that it's going to deflate,
right.
And I know that it's not going to be there. So I'm thinking ahead, like, how now? How do I don't have it. So that's 5-year-old grief.
So there's two things. You know, one thing that you're saying is just what you were saying before about your images after Benjamin died, that we hold on to beliefs until we're ready. So right now, your son is holding on to this until he can be more ready to accept the reality of the physical Benjamin not being here. So this is really kind of a teaching opportunity in a way. So when the balloon deflates, it's a teaching opportunity. And I imagine that you will know what to say when you dig deep into your heart. You'll know what to tell him because he needed to hold on to the balloon for a while, just like you needed to hold on for a while. And yeah, so it's actually such a poignant moment.
I am scared. I'm scared of what that will look like. He'll lay in bed and he says, "Mommy, do you know when Jesus will be ready for me? Can you tell him that I'm ready? Because I want to see Ben. I want to know what he's doing." He tells my sister, "Can you die so you can go be with Ben?" Oh my. "Mommy, I want to die because I want to see what it feels like." That's all he knows.
He knows love too. And he knows the support of your family. He knows that too. And remember, with kids, they ask questions, important questions that we're afraid to ask.
They do.
So these are things we wonder. You wonder too. You wonder those same things that he's wondering. So his questions are wonderful. It's okay. Don't be afraid. You can do this just the way you've done it, step by step, breath by breath. You can deal with his grief the same way. And of course, there are people that can help. There are professionals that can help too. You know, they can help. Good, that's great. Yeah. But I know these. But the important thing are these moments when he talks to you. I get it. It's so, like, he takes your breath away. Like, what do I say? What do I do? But just trust yourself. You're so beautiful, and you know the answers. You really do. But his questions are, it's okay. Be glad he's asking questions. If he wasn't, he'd be holding them all in. And just like you're promoting talking about grief, he's talking about his grief and the way he interprets it.
Yes, and I do encourage him. I've always encouraged him to feel his feelings and talk about them. It's just the conflict or the contention between my grief, his, and me being his mom, right?
Yes.
So I still have to parent him from this place.
Yes.
Like, I can't parent Harper from any other place other than this. From loss.
Of course. Yeah.
It's scared. I worry about him. I don't want to leave him. I want to get away, but I don't want to leave him because I'm afraid.
You're afraid, and yet you're losing being him. So strong. You know, I mean, it's interesting. Like, I, you know, even when we first started and you were talking about being nervous about your podcast and tiptoeing and stuff. And it's funny because yes, you are afraid, but we, My aunt used to say, she's a therapist too, and she used to say, fear is not a stop sign. And you're kind of really living that right now. You're really doing, because you are afraid and you're so honest about your fear, and it's so natural and normal, and yet you're still so brave and going on. And I think it's important to normalize that too, the duality in being able to be afraid, say I'm afraid, and also do. You know, they can coexist, and we don't often acknowledge that. And, and you're really doing a very beautiful job of that.
and love is the antidote to fear. It is. So in those moments when you get most scared, just go to that big, beautiful heart of yours and reach inside, because love is at the center of grief too. Remember, grief isn't just this disease that we have that we can't cure. You know, grief is about living and loving and life.
It's how much love we've had, how much love we've experienced. It's the love that we have left that is just like, I'm still here.
Yes.
I'm still here. Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's it's scary.
Of course. It strikes me, some of the stuff that you're saying, really, it's standing out. We had a wonderful guest on about a year ago, Donna Orbach, and she had lost her son. And I asked her the question of, where does the love go when you lose someone who you love, right? Because it doesn't just go away. It exists in some other form. And it seems like you're, in a lot of ways, taking it. And obviously you have, you know, Harper, and the love goes there. And the love is going into your podcast. And I'm also hearing through listening to your podcast, and it makes me happy to hear, and I know that this can be ever changing, but as right now, it really does sound like the love is going into yourself, because in doing this show, like, I really encourage people to listen to your podcast, because you're in such a beautiful way giving yourself this like acceptance and talking about like how your grief is okay, how, you know, days being terrible are okay, about being happy is okay. Like, would you, do you think it's fair to say that you're able to return some of that love like back into yourself and to your project?
Definitely. I am extending more grace to myself. First, I am gracing myself, and I am gaining serenity outside of everything else. I'm gaining confidence in who I am and where I am and what I have. I have love. I have pain. I have grief. And I don't want it to have all of me. I don't want it to have all of me. I don't know how else to say that.
It's a great way to say it.
I don't want it to have all of me. And I know that we're not going to be separate.
Well, we, you know, you said it, I think, yourself in one of your podcasts, that we have grief, but we are not grief. We have pain, but we are not pain. It's a part of us. You know, I was thinking so much about you and trying to, about the fact that you were looking for, this is your meaning. You use the word meaning and purpose, and I think that's so powerful. And it's been said that one of the tasks of grief is to find new meaning. So I was doing different reading. That's what I do when I start a podcast. I have so many books, as you can see behind me.
And I love it. And I
get to read them for the podcast, because I get to read books I haven't read in a long time.
So two things.
I pulled out two books, okay? One was this book, which I would highly suggest, and it's called Finding Meaning. And it's a book, The Sixth Stage of Grief, by David Kessler.
Okay.
And he was associated with Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, who was the person who first discovered, she was a Swiss psychiatrist years ago, and she discovered the stages of grief. But we realize now that stages are really not significant. It's the tasks of grief. It's the work that we have to do while we're grieving. And I'm not going to get into reading them now, but if you ever want to talk about them, I'd be glad to talk about it with you. But the last task of grief is finding new meaning. Because, as we said before, the meaning of being with the person you love, and in your case, caring for him for 10 years. So I also reread A Man's Search for Meaning, which was written by Viktor Frankl. Viktor Frankl was a Swiss psychiatrist, and he was in concentration camp. Okay. And he survived. But he wrote about the significance of who, what is the resiliency, and how do people emerge from horrible, horrible tragedies? How do they emerge? What is it that helps them? So I wanted to read you a quote that I thought was really fit. And it says, "There is a point after honoring our grief when we want to stop hurting, when the yearning is too much, the emptiness too encompassing. Not talking about lessening our connection to our loved one, but rather decreasing the suffering associated with the connection. In that pain, that opening, we can begin to explore how to find meaning." And when you said to me that when I wake up in the morning, I want to get up and I want to do something. I want to find a meaning in this. It's not that you're not feeling everything that you feel, but something about getting up and breathing and taking care of your son and doing your podcast has become, you know, your new meaning and your new survival.
It definitely has. Bobby, thank you. Can you send me that
quote?
I want to absorb it. You know, a part of where I am is I've been in the hospital so much. Don't let me tell you. I know the staff. I just walk past security, ma'am, sir. Hey, what's up? You know, whatever. And yeah. I just go in. I know everybody there, and everybody knows Benjamin. They're his baby. He's been there since he was 4 months old, right?
Wow.
And so I see other families come in, and I'm in the Bronx. And so there's like it's like a melting pot here. Mm-hmm. And while I have a voice, maybe because I stand 6'2" tall, I don't know, but I show up in the hospital and I show out in the hospital, and I see other families come and they just shrink. Mm. And I don't like that for them. Mm. I don't like that for them. So before they get to where I am, and I hope that they never get there, I just want them, because I don't have any guilt. I don't think that there's anything that I could have done different. So guilt is not a part of my grieving. Yeah. So when you talk about the stages, like, I don't necessarily relate to the stages.
No, not at all. Stages. I was saying they're not really appropriate. Yeah.
No. Yeah. So I want to, the meaning for me is giving a voice to the pain, right? Because the pain precedes all this chaos. But I want families, I want other mothers that I see in the hospital to say, listen, soak up all of this, stand flat-footed in all of this, ask all the questions, all the commas, all the full stops, all the exclamations, all the questions, ask all of them. And so while I want to give a voice to grief, it's the other part. It's the grieving mm-hmm. of that suffering. That yes. long suffering. Mm. Because I grieved, and I didn't even know until now that I was grieving of when course. Benjamin was on life support, when he was waiting for the heart.
Every step. Just,
every step is
it's, every it's in step your of, in your well of grief. Absolutely. Yes. Every single step.
Yes. Yes.
So and, you know, there are people out there up. That may not be able to stand as tall as you right now. You know, there are people out there right now that may feel the shrinking. And that's okay, too. And that's why you, who can stand up and stand on your feet, why it's so important for you to use your voice and help people.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And Sid, that's what gets me up in the morning.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Sid, as we, we can sit here and talk to you for like 6 hours. But as we like end each episode, we always ask people the same question. And it's so interesting to hear how everyone answers it differently. But if you could have given yourself one piece of advice at the beginning of this experience, and the beginning is, you know, in quotations, because that can really be at any point during your experience. But knowing what you know now, having been through this grieving experience and loss experience, what would that piece of advice to your earlier self be?
Wow. Zara. Oh.
I know it's a big quit.
Who this raised you? Bobby!
It's her.
Oh my gosh.
You're so cute.
I would tell my earlier self that you matter. That you matter, Sydney. Accept a little help. Right? I don't know how. Really? I just felt like I was closed. And not because anyone shut me in, but because I closed myself off.
Like a soldier.
So that's what I would, yeah. Sydney, you matter. Accept some help.
That's very, very beautiful. And it's Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Please finish your thought.
No, and that you're not a burden.
Wow, that's profound too.
And right? that I'm not a burden. Yeah.
Right.
And I still struggle with that a little bit now in this grief process, is that I'm, like I said before, I'm so full. I can't keep it to myself. Yeah. And I worry sometimes about how people will receive it. Then I have to pull myself back and say, okay, be honest, be true, be transparent, be raw.
Yeah. You're not a burden. Yeah.
You're a gift.
You're not a burden. And you know when you're really not a burden? When you find your people. Because also, like, not everybody can...
That's a very good point.
...take this in, right? And that doesn't mean that they are bad. Like, it
exactly.
I find that even with... You know, sometimes I'm even... I even try to just talk about the podcast or upcoming guests I have or people I talked to with other friends or something, and they don't want to hear about it. And my initial reaction is like, screw these guys. They don't even hear about it. And then I'm like, oh, they don't want to, they can't hear about this. This isn't like for them. You know what I mean? Like for whatever reason. But like, you're not a burden, and you really aren't a burden to when you find the people in your community, you know what I mean, that can, in the grief community or friends or family members that really can absorb it. And I think like finding those people can be helpful also, because it makes us realize even more that we actually aren't a burden, and it's just that other people sometimes aren't ready for it.
Excellent. You know?
And that's
excellent
what I
point.
Talked about in the last podcast episode is finding your person. And I don't know if you heard where I admitted that, oh, did I put on a show before that funeral? Yeah. And my friend was like, Sydney, cut it out. Cut it out. But, you know, I just had to. So, yes, finding your person. And I'm grateful for this grief community because I didn't know that it existed. And I'm glad that I found you guys. I'm glad that I don't have to curate an image to fit in. It's just, this is who we are.
Yeah.
And it's great.
The community gets it. And absolutely. No apologies.
You know, we often use this quote. It's from Viktor Frankl again. And he says that survival is a community event. And we just believe in that. So that's absolutely. Why we're here. So Zara, I want to add a new part to our podcast at the end.
Yes. What is that it?
If we could all sit down now and have a meal, the three of us.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Amanda, you're invited too.
Yes. Amanda, our producer. You're also
our producer.
Also invited.
What would we make? So if we, let's think of one dish we would make
if we all sat
down together, what we'd make.
Okay. Want to go first, Bobby? It seems like you have an answer. Sorry, we didn't prepare for this part.
I would make chicken soup.
Ooh.
And I made it this week because I had my second vaccine and I wanted to make something that was nurturing. I made my best version of chicken soup. So I would make us a big bowl of chicken soup to start. And what would you guys make?
Go ahead, Sid.
Okay. I think that I would make curry chickpea. Listen, listen. It's the best thing ever.
I bet.
Diced eggplants over jasmine rice.
Oh my God, I'm so hungry.
Okay, all right.
Curry chickpeas.
Delicious. Oh my God, I love
smell it.
Chickpeas.
I
love curry chickpeas.
Oh, delicious.
I know. Okay, guys. Well, I'm going to bring the dessert because obviously we have the meal covered already. So, I'm going to go ahead and bring really decadent, rich chocolate brownies with chocolate chunks in them with like kind of gooey and raw in the middle and crackly on top.
Can you bring vanilla ice cream too? Yes. So we can have it warm.
And vanilla
oat ice cream, please.
Oh, okay. Yes.
I like
Bobby's
oat ice cream.
So we'll bring some oat ice cream and some regular ice cream. Bobby, this is a good question.
I love this question.
This is smart. This is good. All right. Well, now we know what we have to do when we all meet up and have a meal together when COVID allows that to happen. Sid, honestly, again, after like talking to me the first time and after today, like you feel like an old friend, and it's just amazing how your warmth and your generosity of spirit just is, I don't know, it's just so, it's so unique.
Thank you. You're such a
brave and wonderful and incredible human being. And I feel so blessed to have been able to have met you, and to have people be able to hear this episode is a great gift to the world, truly.
Thank you. You're giving me chills.
That's true. And can you just tell people we'll put this in the notes for the show, but can you just tell people where to find you, how to listen to your show, your Instagram handle, etc.?
Oh, sure. Everything is at A Piece of Grief, PEACE.
Love it.
A Piece of Grief on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audible, Google Podcasts. I have a website, apieceofgrief.com, and my Facebook and my Instagram are the same, at A Piece of Grief.
Cool. And don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to A Piece of Grief. So more people can access the show. And really, I just hope we stay in touch, and you know, become real life friends because you're just amazing.
Yeah, you don't get to get rid of me. I'm sorry. That's not how this works, Zara.
Okay, good. Awesome. Sid, this was
Bobby,
great.
Bobby, you either, because you have all the books that I need.
I'm trying to look at all those books behind her. Sid, thank you so much. This was such a gift. And yeah, can't wait to talk to you again soon.
Thank you for having me. This was a therapy for me. I appreciate you guys. Thank you so much. Got I can't it. Wait to talk to you again.
Yay!
Thank
you.
This episode is brought to you by Hearst Ranch. The Hearst family has raised cattle on California's Central Coast since 1865. Today, Hearst Ranch's signature product is their 100% grass-fed, completely hormone and antibiotic-free beef. The Hearst Ranches have always treated their animals with great care. Their cattle live a completely natural existence as foragers and grazers. Well-managed grazing fertilizes the land naturally, sustains a seasonal rhythm to the ranches, and produces a remarkable meat whose flavor is the authentic taste of the American West. Hearst Ranch beef is available seasonally, May through August, in select Whole Food markets throughout California, and all year round at their retail locations in San Simeon and Paso Robles. And now, HRN listeners in Arizona, Nevada, and California can get Hearst Ranch beef delivered right to their door through Larder Meat Company. Go to lardermeatco.com and shop the 100% grass-fed box to stock your freezer with Hearst Ranch beef. That's LARDER, meatco.com. Learn more about the storied history, farming practices, and conservation efforts of Hearst Ranch at HearstRanch.com.
Thank you so much for joining us for Processing. We realize that sharing these types of deeply intimate stories on air is a very personal decision. We began this project as a way to connect our listeners through shared experiences and storytelling. We hope that Processing can be a platform for sharing, learning, and healing. We appreciate our guests' willingness to be vulnerable and value nothing more than making both our guests' and listeners' experiences with our show positive and progressive. If you're interested in being a guest on the show or writing in a listener letter, please email processing@heritageradionetwork.org. Please follow us at processing_podcast on Instagram. Processing is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/Heritage Radio Network. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, and more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click at the heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.